The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Dr. Rab, what you got?
Woo-hoo!
That's what I'm talking about. Dark Side of the Pooch. It must be a Monday. It runs every single Monday, and coming up starting next week, a Dark Side of the Pooch will be running every single day of the week, Monday through Friday, so you can get all of your pet news, your pet stories. Very special day today. You know what it is today, Dr. Rab there from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital? Today is August 1st when we're recording the show, but it's no longer August 1st. You know what it's called now?
It's National Pet Day.
It is Doggest 1st. This is the universal birthday for pets adopted from shelters. They're now saying that because you get dogs from shelters, you never know how old they are, right? And so you just have to make up a birthday. So today is Doggest 1st, the first ever. So every Doggest 1st, you can celebrate the birthday of your pets adopted through pet shelters. Isn't that wonderful?
I like that. I like that a lot. It's like adopted kids. They're gotcha day.
Yeah. Let's get into this a little bit because, you know, I had dogs my entire life. We always had mutts. We loved mutts. They were always mixed breeds. They were the best dogs we ever had. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that we weren't a wealthy family. And there was usually a gift or someone said, hey, we got an extra pup. Will you take it? And we went from one dog to next dog. And then you got your purebred people, your people that like to go out and spend thousands of dogs on an individual animal for whatever reason it is. Some people will only buy purebreds. Some people, it doesn't really care. Sometimes I've had both. I got a Havanese. I've had a poodle, and then I've had mutts. I've got an Australian Shepherd. So tell me, what kind, from a personality standpoint, what differences do you see in customers when it comes to whether they have a mutt or a purebred, or is there one?
I don't think there is one. I think that maybe people have like a heart for rescuing a dog.
Yes.
You know, maybe that's just, you know, that's just kind of their mission, you know, or that's their nonprofit. You know, that's what they like to do. But I think I don't think it's a quality or a characteristic in a person versus someone who gets a purebred versus someone who gets a, you know, just a dog that is at the shelter and it's not any one specific breed. I think it's just, you know, like, you know, if you have a thing for childhood cancer and that's what, you know, that's your passion, mm-hmm. you know, that's your deal. But some people just have, their deal is rescuing dogs and taking care of dogs. And so they want to find the one that doesn't have a home. That's just their thing. Somebody else's thing is, you know, addiction. You know, trying to help people with addiction. So, you know, I think it's just it's a calling, really.
There you go. He's Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital, at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook, of course. And you can find his store out there in the Rossbridge area, 208-0301, 205, 208-0301. Dr. Rab Stewart joins us every single Monday for Dark Side of the Pooch. What's happened at the store? Anything interesting going on?
Oh, man. You remember a couple weeks ago we were talking about this influenza deal?
Yeah, and I saw where there's a lot of pet shelters actually closing down right now because it's becoming somewhat of a pandemic or an epidemic. What's going on?
Oh, man, it is just spreading like crazy. And, the Humane Society, the GBHS, has said that they're going to slow adoptions and they're going to slow any intakes. Dogs that are considered to be, you know, dangerous and, a threat, they're still letting animal control drop off, but they're being very, very cautious with dog-to-dog contact. But they're, you know, the surrenders, they have basically said, we can't take any unless they're a threat. And then they're taking a lot of precautions with, they're doing some work with veterinarians that specialize in this type of upper respiratory kind of shelter, pandemics. So they're putting their heads together with a really great veterinarian from Florida to try to figure out, you know, how they can be. And it's not just Greater Birmingham Humane Society. I'm just using them as an example. I mean, it's, you know, tons of boarding and grooming facilities all throughout this area and outside of the area, because when we call our you know, I think we saw our first case of flu close to a month ago. And we immediately called the manufacturer of our flu vaccine, and because these dogs are still getting this, even though they've gotten the vaccine. And we talked to them about what we were seeing, and they already knew about it. So it's not just in Birmingham. I mean, it's outside of here. It's regional, outside of our state.
All right, so
So it's going crazy.
let's dive into this now. First of all, and I got a lot of questions here for you, so let's pick one and off at a time. How does this start? I mean, influenza has been around for dogs for a long period of time. We've never seen it at this point, but how eventually did this actually start?
Well, the areas that have former horse racing or dog racing are hotbeds. So, you know, I'm not, this didn't start, again, I don't think this started in Birmingham, but, you know, they've got a lot of really smart people that deal with these kind of outbreaks. And so maybe at some point we will be able to find that first case. But, you know, areas that have, you know, that in their history, it's really common. That it pops up in those areas. But also there's just so much dog travel. You know, there's just people take their dogs everywhere, on planes and cars, you know, wherever. And so the interstate travel, it never stops. I mean, unless COVID stops it. But you know, now it's just back as it always has been. And so these dogs, they travel, and this outbreak could have started anywhere in the country. And you just get that dog that's positive, and its home is in Birmingham, and it gets groomed, you know, the first Tuesday of the month, or it goes to daycare 5 days a week. That dog spreads it to, you know, 15 other dogs, and then each one of them spreads it. So, you know.
All right, so let's go with symptoms. What are the symptoms if your dog has influenza?
Almost all these dogs are coughing. And that's how the owners know, because it's hard to pinpoint mild lethargy or, you know, maybe body aches, body soreness. Most people aren't going to pick up on that in their pet. They're just going to say, oh, you know, maybe they're just tired from playing or, you know, whatever, because the dog cannot verbalize, you know, I just don't feel good. I feel achy or I don't feel great. So the things that you'll see is the cough almost with every one of these dogs, maybe a little bit of inappetence. So they're not one to eat a lot. But those are the two main things that we see. Sometimes they'll have a little bit of nasal discharge, whether it be clear or kind of mucoid nasal discharge. But I mean, the cough seems to be universal in all these cases.
Okay, so should dogs, well, first of all, is it a killer? If it's not treated, can it kill the animal? Second of all, obviously, when you go in to the Rossbridge Animal Hospital and your dog gives influenza, what is that treatment like? And can dogs be vaccinated prior to them getting influenza? Or is it something, is it a vaccination that they get before? In other words, should people have their dogs vaccinated right now?
Those are all really good questions. The first question, well, okay, so let me start with the vaccine. The vaccine is effective, and you don't want to give it once symptoms start. I mean, you know, the influenza vaccine is something that we recommend that dogs get once a year, and we have them on the schedule. They get the vaccine. But if they, you know, if they contract the virus, they start having symptoms, we don't want to vaccinate them at that point. Because the body and its immune system is already working overtime. And if you vaccinate a sick animal, it can make them worse. So we have not seen any deaths from the flu vaccine, from influenza, from getting flu. But it is possible. But you know, dogs are going to die of flu the same way that a person dies of flu. You know, usually it is a secondary infection that causes pneumonia, and then that basically makes it impossible for the dog to breathe and they die. Two of these cases, off the top of my head, have developed pneumonia, but we have been able to treat them and they've recovered. So we, you know, at our practice, have not had any casualties, but it certainly can happen. I think there was one more question there, but I don't remember what it was.
No, I just wanted to know. So you said at the beginning of this talk that there are some animals that have been vaccinated that are getting influenza. What's going on there?
any vaccine that you give, it has the, its main job is to keep the pet from getting sick at all. But its second job is to limit symptoms and severity. So no vaccine is 100%. It's not 100%. You know, it's not efficacious to 100%.
Okay.
So even though they are still getting the virus, the dogs that have been vaccinated, their symptoms have been limited and they have not gotten sick. So I think that we're, you know, the, I don't pretend to know a lot about human medicine, but the same thing happens with human vaccines. Now the COVID vaccine, again, I don't, you know, that's a whole different type of vaccine.
Sure.
So the vaccines that we use are either modified live vaccines or they're killed vaccines. Modified live vaccines, they have the live virus in it, but it's modified so that if you give the vaccine, you don't get incredibly sick. Killed viruses don't have the live, or killed vaccines don't have the live virus in it. You know, it just has the information of the virus. Mm-hmm. And so the body takes that information and mounts an immune response. So, you know, no vaccine is perfect because it is not the actual virus. And that's why they're not 100% effective.
Yeah, and certainly if you think your dog has influenza, take it to the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. But if you don't, or maybe you miss it, or maybe you just think your dog's coughing a lot and you just kind of slips your mind, is it a deadly disease, or is it like influenza for human beings where some are severe and some are not?
Well, it's not so far with us, it's not deadly.
Yeah.
But it is definitely something that you, if your pet's coughing, you need to have them seen.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not eating and that goes on for no more than 2 days, it needs to be seen. And if you notice that your dog has, you know, is overly lethargic. So, I mean, if you're looking at your dog and you think, well, maybe it's a little more lethargic than usual. Don't go on that. You know, you're going to know if your dog is lethargic or not. And if you get to the point where there's no, you know, there's no question, my dog, it just doesn't have the energy that it had a week ago, then it needs to be seen.
I know I'm going to get this question too, but is it transferable? Can you get flu from a dog, or can a dog get a flu from human?
No. So okay. the canine influenza cannot be spread between dogs and people. Now the interesting thing is, so the tests that we have sent off, these dogs are also testing positive for influenza A, and there is no vaccine for influenza A. They're testing positive for influenza H3N2, which is that's the type of strain, and they're testing positive for influenza A. Now people also get influenza A, but what we don't know at this time, is this the same influenza A that people get?
Yeah.
But I will also say that we haven't had any clients that have said, hey, my dog tested positive for the flu, now I have it.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I think that remains to be seen, but the H3N2 is definitely not something that is zoonotic, meaning transmissible from dog to people.
Well, and hopefully we'll have this dog influenza under control before we actually hit our flu season a little bit later on. I know it usually happens at the end of summer and early fall here. Dark Side of the Pooch, we run it every Monday. Start next week, and you get it 5 days a week. 1 day is just not enough. Dr. Rab Stewart, of course, Rossbridge Animal Hospital, 205-208-0301, 208-0301. They're the best. And on top of that, we've got some great emails. info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. Drop your emails, or you can go to tonycurryradio.net, become a bonehead and drop your emails there. Penny in Birmingham has, she wants a dog myths busted. She wants you to go, she's got 10 dog myths, and I'll give those to you here in just a second. But we have another question here from Penny in Birmingham. She says that she's having issues with ants. She said, I've never had issues with ants. I'm having issues with ants. And I thought, it's funny because you get rid of ants in the pantry, and then they end up in the kitchen, then they end up in the living room, and then all of a sudden I woke up one morning and my entire thing of dog food was filled with ants, and she is having an issue. She goes, no matter where I put the dog food, no matter how many times I clean it out, I keep getting ants in my dog food. What can I do?
I wonder if she puts it in like a container. Because yeah. I leave my dog food in the bag.
Yeah.
And I don't have any problems with ants getting in it.
Okay.
But I wonder if she put it in a container, if that would help. Otherwise, pest control. I know a great pest control company. Penny can email me.
Okay. There you go. All right, get it done. We have Taylor in Gainesville. Wants to know, and she loves giving her three dogs rides in the car. She drops the windows down all the way, and she's never thought her dogs would jump out of the car. She said, but do I need to worry about that? Do dogs sense, hey, I'm going 65 miles an hour, I don't need to jump out of the car?
We've treated a couple of dogs that have jumped out of cars before.
Really?
Yeah, and they were all not at my current practice, but there were a couple that I treated where I used to work, and I don't know if it's just a difference in that area, you know, that location, mm-hmm. or if just the luck of the draw, yeah. You know. But they, you know, I think these dogs that I've treated for jumping out of cars before, I don't think it's an issue that they fell out. I think that they, if I remember right, they jumped out. You know, there was something that they saw, and I don't know how fast they were going at the time. I don't remember that. I don't know if it was like they were stopped at a stop sign or a red light, and that dog saw something that piqued its interest, and yeah. Maybe the owner wasn't stopped 100%, and they just bailed out. But the ones that I've treated have not been real serious. It's all just been kind of superficial wounds, you know, scrapes and kind of bumps.
So I'm betting it's probably out of traffic light. Maybe they saw another dog in another car, and they wanted a little piece, maybe.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we see more of. And these, and the ones of these that we have seen have been fatal, are golf cart accidents.
Really?
Dogs jumping. Yeah, dogs. Well, you know, where we're located right now, it's a great neighborhood, and a lot of people have golf carts.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, we had one in our neighborhood that was fatal. And then we had another, a client who spends half their time here and half their time in Florida in a community down there. Well, that has a lot of golf carts, and one of their dogs down there in Florida jumped out of a moving golf cart.
Wow.
And killed it.
That's sad. This is Dark Side of the Pooch with Dr. Rab Stewart, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Twitter, Rossbridge Vet, and also the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. info@tonycurryradio.net. If you have some email questions, we'll get into some dog myths busted here in just a second. I'm going to ask a question, though, for my operations manager. You know, he got his Australian Shepherd. I know he brought it to the Rossbridge Animal Hospital last week. It is a beautiful dog.
Yeah, we saw it Friday.
It is a beautiful dog. The color on it is unbelievable. His eyes are beautiful. But he is smothering that animal. he cannot go 3 minutes without being around that puppy dog. And I love that about him, but there's a reason why he's not at work today. But I'm like, and it's just like a baby, right? When you have a baby, you just cannot be around a baby long enough. Is that good for an animal in this particular case? Do puppies need to have alone time? Do they need some independence? Or is it okay just to smother it until you finally get tired of it?
I feel like this is a loaded question.
Get him back to work.
No, but they need to be alone some. Yeah. And I think I feel like Mondays are the day that it needs to be alone.
Yes.
I'm just kidding. I don't really know the day. I know that Mondays are big at the Tony Curry Radio Network. That's yep. why I said that.
Yes.
But they do need some alone time so that they, you know, understand that you're going to come back, because if you spend all your time with them for the first 2 weeks, that first time you leave is going to be really traumatic,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So they need to have socialization, but they also need to have some time where they're by themselves. And you need to initially, if you can, you need to do just short periods of time, you know, like when you first get them, make them be alone for 5 minutes, you know, then stretch that out, make them be alone for 10, 15, half hour, an hour, and get them to where they're okay by themselves. And I wish I had done this. I mean, I'm speaking from experience here, because, you know, my dog, I mean, if you put him in a kennel, he loses his mind.
Yeah, I know, right?
But you know, a part of that is because he was one of these dogs that was on the streets. You know, we don't know his history. You know, we don't know his exact age. He was young. He was a puppy. But, and, you know, so it's hard to know exactly what that trigger is. But, you know, you got to train the dog to enjoy the kennel. And you have to put, you know, give them treats while they're in there and try to make it like a, make it a game, or just kind of start small and work your way up.
All right, dog myths busted. You ready to go? Terry wanted to. She gave us 10 of these things, and we'll just go ripping through them. All right, you let me know whether they're a myth or whether they're busted or whether they're plausible. Ready?
I hope I know the answers.
The first one is dogs can't tell how long you've been gone. It is amazing. You could be just walking out of the mailbox, and you come back, and they're all over you. You're gone for 3 days. They react the same way. Dogs can't tell time.
I think that is true up to a point. Like I don't know what that point would be. So I would say that is true, but I think they can tell the difference between like 1 minute and an hour. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to longer times, I don't think they have any concept of time.
All right. Number two, a wet nose is a good nose. Dry noses mean your animal's sick.
I'm going to go with myth on that. But again, it's up to a point. If a dog is dehydrated, then their body is going to find ways to conserve moisture. But I have people call our office from time to time, and they say that I know that my dog is healthy because it has a wet nose. Well, mm-hmm. That's not true. I mean, yeah. Dogs can be sick and have wet noses. And I've had the opposite. You know, my dog's has a dry nose. I know that it's sick. That's also not, that's not always true. So there's probably a little bit of truth to that. But for the most part, you know, judging your dog's overall health but the moisture content of the tip of his nose is not a very good idea.
Well, when your nose is running, are you healthy?
I'm not. I'm not healthy when I have a wet nose.
Does your wife like that when you nuzzle up to her neck when your nose is running?
No, she's like, no, she doesn't. My wife is very ticklish, so yeah. If I do anything with her neck, she's like a turtle. You know, she like puts her head in her shell.
Dark side of the pooch. Oh, my gosh. Right here on Tony Curry Radio. And by the way, starting next week, it's going to run every day of the week. Number three, you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Oh, that's definitely a myth. You can teach an old dog new tricks.
Okay. All right. Number four, my dog eats grass whenever it has an upset stomach.
So dogs may eat grass if they have an upset stomach, but dogs also may eat grass if they want to give themselves an upset stomach. So again, I think
hold on, say that again. Now that was good.
Yeah. So I think dogs can, and dogs will sometimes eat grass to give themselves an upset stomach because they know that they know that it's an emetic, meaning that it's something that can make them vomit.
Yeah.
But you know, dogs will eat grass. Dogs will eat anything at any time for any reason. So if your dog is eating grass, it doesn't mean that it has stomach pains. And if it's eating grass, it doesn't mean that it wants stomach pains. It's just one of those things where you can't really put a whole lot of stock into it. But dogs will eat grass in an attempt to vomit. You know, so maybe they are nauseous when they start eating the grass.
That's pretty smart. And I will say this. I saw my Australian Shepherd eating some grass yesterday, and I left him outside because I knew he was going to puke, and he did. And he seemed to be better. So there you have it. Dog myths busted here. Well-trained dogs will never bite.
That's a myth. That's a myth. Because, you know, dogs are still animals and they don't know proper etiquette. So even if you have a well-trained dog, if, for example, the thing that we see most of the time is like small children.
Yeah.
You know, they get in the dog, they don't understand that a dog, they don't understand the cues of a dog when the dog is fed up and when the dog might bite. Mm-hmm. So, I'd say well-trained dogs will still bite. And I think children are the culprit, you know, a lot of times. They just don't know when to stop pushing that dog's buttons.
All right. Number six, it's important for me to show my dog that I am the boss. I'm not sure. I think we all want to do that. And I think by giving it right commands and training it correctly, it knows that. But I'm not sure how that works. But does that make sense?
Yeah. That is not a myth. It's important that your dog knows that you're the boss. You don't want to intentionally do things to make a dog be submissive and fear you. You know, that's not what it's about. It's the same with kids. Like, you know, you want your kids to have a healthy respect, but you don't gain that by child abuse.
Yeah.
You know, just like you don't gain it by animal abuse.
Yeah.
The best ways to teach your dog that you are dominant is to, when it's young, flip it on its back and make it expose its belly to you. But then, praise it and pet it and let it know that, yes, I'm dominant and you are in some ways inferior. And here's how I'm going to show you, but at the same time, I'm here to help you and love you and, have a good relationship. So, but when dogs, they perform a behavior that is not ideal, then, there needs to be some way that you let them know that that's not okay. Whether that be verbal, loud noise, if you have one of these e-collars or electrical collars or buzz collars or spray collars or whatever, it's important that they know what's right, what's a right behavior and a wrong behavior.
I typically have not had an issue with my dogs knowing that I'm the alpha dog, but I have had a dog and come to find out that it was having seizures, so I felt bad about the way I treated it. But I have had dogs growl at me. My dogs, after I've had them for years, actually growl at me. What's the best thing to do when a dog growls at you, your home pet?
When I'm and I'm just speaking from experience here. When I've had dogs that growl at me, first of all, I mean I don't take a step back. If it's my own personal dog, you cannot take a step back. You either have to stand your ground or you have to have some type of body language that would show them that you are not afraid. So, I think this is something that we've talked about before, but it's really interesting how dogs sense our body position. So if a dog is showing aggression at you and you want to try to make it back down, okay, you want to be sure that you're facing the dog with your front. If you turn to the side, a dog sees that as a sign of submission or inferiority. So, and sometimes, hey, sometimes it's time to tuck tail and run. Because maybe we're talking about a dog you don't know. Maybe we're talking about your neighbor's dog who is ready to castrate you. So at that point, you don't want to stand to face it. You might want to turn, tuck tail and run or walk back slowly or whatever. We're only talking about if it's your own personal dog. You want to face it. You want to be big, maybe even take a step towards it, maybe take a loud step towards it. That's what I do. I will take a step of my dog and stomp.
And
Like, hey.
then do you discipline that dog? I mean, I've grabbed the dogs by the scruff of the neck, and then I discipline them because I don't want them to think it's okay to growl at me. But sometimes I don't think they put two and two together.
It depends on what their response is to that, that body language. If they kind of cower down with when I step towards them or and make a loud noise, if they kind of cower and tuck their tail and walk away, then I'm okay. But if they don't show a sign of submission based on what I do, then I might take it to the next level and put, do some type of either using a collar, one of these, like a prong collar or an electrical collar or a spray collar or something like that. And then at that point, you may have to get physical with them. But all the dogs that I've ever had, that's all I've needed to do. Take a step towards them, make a loud noise, and they're like, "Oh, okay, yeah, this is the guy that takes care of me." And it's only happened a couple times. But unfortunately, I haven't really had that problem before. But also, I would say that if you do have, we don't want anybody to get hurt. So if somebody out there is listening and they have a new dog, and the dog is having some growling issues, then I mean, I would recommend that you get a trainer before you do. Don't get hurt. Get a trainer involved. Don't try to be a hero. All trainers are going to give you some tools, like the prong collar or like the e-collar, to help you get the most, out of your friend and keep everybody in your house from getting hurt. So it's easy for me to say, "Oh, well, this is what I do when a dog growls at me or when my own personal dog growls at me." And it's because, I've been dealing with dogs for, over 10 years. So, but people listening at home haven't. So just, be safe. And if you feel like you're in danger, then the best thing to do is to get a trainer involved or get a veterinarian involved.
All right, dogs don't like to watch TV.
Some dogs like to watch TV. So I think for some dogs, if dogs do not like to watch TV is a myth. If you put all dogs, it's definitely a myth.
All right, two more. Blind dogs will eat anything.
Oh, that's a myth. Because their noses are so good.
Yeah, if you have a dog, because I had a dog that ended up being blind and then it ended up eating its own poop. And had never eaten its own poop before. And I'm like, what are you doing? And I just figured it's because he's blind and liked the smell of it. And so he's just eating it. So the fact that he just, is there something to that?
I mean, I think that they use their eyes to figure out what is food. But also, a blind dog is not going to eat anything. That they may put more things in their mouth.
Yeah.
But that's not eating. You know, that's not eating. They may use their mouths more for feeling things if they lose their eyesight.
It was great because whenever I walked it, I didn't have to pick up its poop.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Finally, shaving your dog will keep it cooler than not shaving your dog.
That's a myth because they use some breeds use their hair and their coat as a cooling mechanism.
How to?
Sorry. What's that, Tony?
How do they use their coat to stay cool?
Well, it has to do with like moisture retention. You know, it helps keep them cool when you add the fur to moisture.
There you go. Awesome, awesome, awesome. A great show coming up next week. You're going to have your show airing every single day of the week. I'm going to pick a time for you. As a matter of fact, I think Dark Side of the Pooch is going to be airing every single Monday through Friday night at 7 o'clock. So when you're driving home, you can listen to your show every Monday through Friday right here on Tony Curry Radio. Of course, go to Spotify or wherever you get your podcast, and you go back and listen to all of our Dark Side of the Pooches and hear the shows live right here on TKR, the TKR app, and Tony Curry Radio. Dr. Rab, thank you so much.
All right, man. Great time. Talk to you next week.
And, of course, every week it's brought to you by Ed's Pet World. Ed's Pet World down there in Homewood. They're getting ready to celebrate. They're going to have their 50th anniversary here in about a year and a half, 2 years. We're going to have a big celebration. Exotic pets. I was down there last week. I saw a Cayman alligator. They had bearded dragons, tarantulas, ferrets, rabbits, birds that were singing, talking to me. They had water turtles. They got everything down there. Great fish down there. I got me a couple of sucker fish. Check out Ed's Pet World. Of course, Seth travels the country, and he's looking for great toys in the box. He does the watches. He does Star Wars stuff, Star Trek stuff. He does it all. If you're looking for any great vintage toy, check out Ed's Pet World for exotic pets and vintage toys, and they buy, sell, and trade those toys as well. Check them out. It is Ed's Pet World. Thanks. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Tony.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.